It is Monday, which means tonight we have the DL Debate Show, which is obviously a live radio show for you to listen to, but a very popular podcast as well. And its presenter is Brendan Devenny, who joins me now. Brendan, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Yes, what's happening to you, man?
It's good to have you with us. Let's start with yesterday's game. It was a strange one to watch. I'll give you my assessment as an armchair fan that knows nothing. It was incredibly tight. Derry were really good. I normally like all different types of games. I didn't really enjoy it. And then sort of in the last quarter, if I could phrase it like that there, Donegal just seemed to be able to walk through Derry. And I couldn't see from a television perspective what had changed, but it became almost like tap-in practice, tap-over practice. But sort of something seemed to change towards the end of the game that had no relevance or reference to the earlier part of it. I don't know if there's anything to that or if you can make any sense of that, or what did you see, you know, actually in person, Brendan?
Yeah, it's a fair point, Greg. I think, you know, we basically took our chances that we hadn't been previous. There's a couple of things. Brendan Rodgers went off injured. He was Michael Murphy, Marcin Murphy. Murphy's impact in the game. And as I say, we got, I think, Darryl Boyle's two-pointer when we were really struggling. I mean, Greg, at that point halfway through the second half when we were 8 down, I think it was 13-118. Listen, it was Derry's game. Mm. It was their game because we were misfiring. I mean, four of our starting forwards were all misfiring on the day. And you're just thinking, where's this going to come from now? We had goal opportunities. We had about six kind of half goal chances, three definite ones before we got the goal. So nothing seemed to be happening right. And then, as I say, between Dara's kick, Shane O'Donnell's brilliant goal, the brilliant two-pointer from Kieran Thompson, laid the foundation for it, and central to all that was the power of Michael Murphy out around the middle. So that's where it changed, Greg.
Yeah, and I mean, it's subtle and it's not so subtle. It is just getting up and palming a ball to an opposition player and then the play continuing and a point resulting from that. It's amazing the impact he can have in that, and a great target man. Let's listen to a little bit of what Jim McGuinness, if you don't mind. Let's see what Jim McGuinness had to say after the game.
We're delighted with the response in the last quarter. You know, they were very tired today. That was obvious. They were very tired. You know, we weren't ourselves today for, you know, a large part of it. It is our fifth week on the bounce, I suppose. You're playing a good side that know how to use the ball and keep the ball. But there was a lot of times now we didn't lay a hand on them defensively. A lot of times, even for Conor Glass's goal, we couldn't even get back. So I think they've definitely deserved a few days off now. We'll give them a wee bit of a circuit breaker for a couple of days now, physical and mental, and hopefully we can freshen them up and go from there.
Like, I mean, obviously it's been a hard road so far, but it's very early in sort of like a compact season. And he spoke a little later on then to Oisin Kelly about maybe the poison chalice of a final. Some teams might want it, others may not. You heard those comments. What did you read into them? What was he saying to us, Brendan?
Just as we know, because we're in the Ulster Championship and because we've Derry and we're in the preliminary, it just doesn't suit to have these games together. And like, a lot of people complain about the league and there shouldn't be a league final, which in terms of a league being a league, I agree with. But then I was chatting to Michael Boyle, one of our own Donegal lads, is coaching over in London. And London have a potential opportunity of making a Division 4 final, which would be played at Croke Park, which would be probably one of the greatest days in any of those playing guys' careers. So there's that kind of changed my mind on it a bit then. I guess none of the Division 1 teams, well, not some of them. Obviously, if you're in Munster or Leinster, it wouldn't bother Dublin or Kerry to be in the final. But I don't think the Connacht teams want to be in it, and definitely not the Ulster teams. So it's a bit of a juggling act there because you've got Tyrone coming up, you know, in Letterkenny weekend after next. And listen, they're your neighbours. You don't want to, you know, be beaten, but at the same time, you actually don't want to be in a league final. It's a very strange position to be in. You heard Jim saying, listen, we'll play it how we need to play it. But it's a difficult one. Listen, you're definitely going to see a very changed Donegal team in that Tyrone game. They'll be desperate for points. So, but listen, that gives Donegal ultimately an opportunity now because they've done so well and they've expended so much energy that they now actually can have a couple of weeks, Greg, as Jim says, circuit breaker. Maybe it's time for a bit of relaxing. And then actually leading into the Mayo game again, he can play, you know, the team that he wants. So in many ways, this is great preparation now with Derry in mind, that Donegal can have a couple of weeks where the pressure's off. So I think in many ways it'll work out. And certainly, as I say, we don't, as Jim's saying there, it's not something we need as a league title.
But,
but
we know how astute he is, and he talked of, you know, the sponsors being incredibly important and needing a, and wanting a showpiece. So it is a balancing act. So we're talking from a position of, you know, second in the table on points difference, effectively. We're equal with Galway at the top of the table, and we can sort of have this type of a conversation. But what if you're Derry and Tyrone, and maybe even to a lesser extent Kerry? There's still a couple of games to go, but let's focus on the you know, we can strategize maybe and even take a defeat here or there as we run into the championship. But if you're Derry or Tyrone, you know, losing's a habit as well. You know, you need to have some sort of momentum going into the championship and into the, you know, into that part of the season. So that probably a different conversation they might be having in GAA circles in those two counties or not?
I think so. They're very different situations. I think for Derry, you know, you look at it, they should have beaten Galway. They had a last opportunity to snatch them. They were 9 down, but they should have beaten Galway. They shouldn't have beaten Kerry. So they could have been sitting 4 points before Dublin hammered them. So they came on very desperate in that match, and you could see them yesterday. I think when we came at them, Greg, when we hit that 1-7 without reply against Dublin in the middle part of that game, they conceded 1-10 without reply, which is crazy a stat in terms of a team maybe lacking in confidence. Obviously, Paddy Talley was quite late getting into his management role there. He's a good backroom team there, the likes of MacGyver and McGuckin and Flynn and Adam. So he has a good backroom team there, but Derry are just struggling, I think, for a wee bit of identity from the team that was, you know, second favourites to win the All-Ireland this time last year. For Tyrone, I think big effect, obviously, was Eric Kieran lads not being there. And again, I suppose Malik O'Rourke looking to put a stamp on it. But they've competed well. Probably without Clifford coming back, they would have beaten Kerry. And they look like, I mean, indiscretion, how they coughed up the draw yesterday was crazy. The black card guy coming back on under defence. I mean, these are the things can catch you out, Greg. So Tyrone will probably feel unlucky that they're in this position. But just with, particularly with Tyrone, I think they've had 2 under-20 All-Irelands this last number of years. Serious amount of talent. Now, Derry have been brilliant at underage as well. So there is talent coming through. Just people in Derry now wonder, can Paddy Talley mould them back to what they were under Rory Gallagher? And I think for Derry, or for Tyrone, it's a bit of a new dawn. I think no doubt Malachy O'Rourke will make a good job of them.
Yeah, yesterday the 20-second kick-out rule didn't seem to really matter. It certainly did, I think, in the Armagh Dublin game. And, you know, I was watching it and it was a bit controversial. There's a few... There was a free for a delayed kick out, but also to the 3-on-3 rule. There was a couple of calls on that, which was pretty decisive, and it looked a little bit confused, right? The messaging. It'd be helpful if we could hear what the ref was saying, I suppose. But it would make you wonder, in the cut and thrust deep, deep, deep into the championship, when some of these calls are being made and so much sort of rests on it, that we could yet to see the real controversy of the enforcement of some of these new rules. Or maybe we've got time to get it right, Brendan.
Listen, that's a big thing, Greg, and therefore she now need to look and need to act and be smart about what they're doing here, because there's certain rules in there silly and there's no need for them, and then there's certain rules just need tweaked a bit. Now, they met last week in person, they're meeting today via Zoom, so we're just hoping, Greg, that rules like this, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know why we need the game quickened up from kickouts.
And the clock stopped anyway, isn't it?
Stop, exactly. Stop the clock. And if you want, once the keeper has the ball in his hand, you could say, right, I'll give you 15 seconds to kick it out then. Because, I mean, what's he going to do anyway? And sometimes, Greg, there's a brilliant score or a goal. Next thing, the keeper has the ball and it's kicked out and you've hardly had time to even enjoy the score. So I don't know why we're trying to quicken up keepers as well. It's as if we're trying to create complete chaos out in the pitch. And I don't think there's any need for that. So I think... Listen, this has been a tsunami in terms of change to our game. We got to weigh it all up now in the middle of all these matches. And you can see a lot of the managers are giving off. I mean, Jim yesterday, you know, was saying the schedule diminishes what the league is because it's just too full on. And so Kieran McGinney, every press conference is giving off about something. So a lot of managers are trying to get their head around everything. And again, we got to make time for the refs as well in all this here. So I think we need to streamline and make it as straightforward as possible, Greg. But some of the rules have been great at quickening things up. But still, as you said, Greg, it was a funny game yesterday. And I think in the first half, because Derry knew Donegal were kicking into a bit of breeze, they sat very deep. And Donegal ended up working the ball over and back a few times, and it was very pedestrian again. So you're like, even with the best ball in the world, you're going to end up with those periods of the game where some team's keeping the ball because the other team doesn't want to come out and engage them. And I think that's one of the reasons why the FRC left the keeper in to come forward. I think that they were thinking, you got to go and attack the team up the pitch, and if you don't, we're going to let the keeper come out. So what they're saying is go and attack the team all around the pitch, put pressure on them because they can't go back to the keeper. But if you allow them into your half and you retreat into your shell, we're going to let the keeper come up. So as much as everybody was giving off with 12v11, a lot of people are saying it has to go, it's going to go. I'm not too sure if it is.
All right, quick word on some of the other action. After the historic performance from our hurlers yesterday, they sort of suffered after a slow start against Kildare and couldn't close the gap narrow enough. 3-21, wasn't it, to 1-15, Kildare beat Donegal.
Yeah, it took us a while to get going. Listen, Kildare, top team. Mickey McCann wouldn't have earmarked that as one of his potential victories. So, I wouldn't be too worried about that. More than anything, if you're able to mix it at home with some of the big sides, particularly using that home advantage, which we did against Kerry, that's what's important. We have Derry in 3 weeks' time. That's a big game for the Division 2 status, and they're the games that Mickey would have been earmarking. So, listen, I wouldn't be in any way worried about that result.
All right, no longer the draw specialists in the Ladies National Football League Division 2, going down to Galway, 2-17 to 6 points, a wide victory for Galway there.
Yeah, listen, Galway won the top sides, and it, Greg, listen, they'll be pushing, they'll be looking for a tilt at the big honours this year, and listen, as we keep saying, this is a new Donegal team. That's a more experienced Galway team that is further down the tracks. That's what can happen in games. So again, you know, I wouldn't be too worried about that. Again, I don't think James would have been, you know, earmarking necessarily Galway for victories in this. So you got to, no more than the hurlers, you got to target certain people in the division. And this isn't one of the games. But listen, even the defeats they get, you know, again, you learn a hell of a lot. And that's the thing,
especially with a new crop of players, you know, a team in such transition.
Yeah, and you know, there's no such thing as, you know, you get the tank in. You could see Galway, Donegal in a year's time, 2 years' time, turning around and beating this Galway team. That's the nature of sport. You got to build from somewhere. And listen, they'll take their learnings from it.
Lot to unpack, and you've got some great guests as always on the show tonight, just after the 7 o'clock news. Michael McMullen of the Gaelic Life newspaper is in the studio, which is great. And we'll get the views of Paddy Bradley, a former Derry County star. He's also going to be joining Brendan and the crew to reflect on the weekend's footballers and dig much more deeper into it than we can on this slot. Brendan, listen, fantastic. Good to see you. Good luck with tonight. Take care of yourself. Brendan Devaney. He is, as I say, live just after 7 o'clock, and then it's available shortly thereafter for you to listen as a podcast. And that's a show you can also watch, by the way, as well. They stream live as we do here on the 9 till noon show, just in case that's how you want to detract yourself from EastEnders or whatever might be on at 7. In fact, you can watch it and miss Coronation Street and then watch Coronation Street and Plus One. It's up to you. A lot of you reacting to Peter Casey's contribution, and not terribly favourably, I don't think. We're going to read some of those comments shortly, but if you do have a comment in relation to that, not too late to get your phone out and give us a call or text or WhatsApp in. All this week, in association with the Donegal Sports Partnership, we are looking at the role of women in sport. And this morning we have, into her second term as Donegal GEA PRO, Sinead Breen. Sinead, thanks so much for calling in. How are you keeping?
I'm great, Craig. How are you?
Good. And yours is an incredibly busy job.
It is,
It's massive, like.
It is, but I wouldn't change a thing now, in fairness. I suppose it's as broad as you want it to be, and it's as busy as you want to make it. I'm very much if you're going to do it right.
Do it right, mindset. Okay. And you had a year done. You didn't think twice about seeking a second term.
Absolutely not. No, I have every intention of doing as much as I can do as PRO. Definitely didn't think twice. I just was very mindful that I wanted to ramp it up another gear, I suppose, this year.
Mm-hmm. And what are your what are you pleased with in terms of achievements so far in the role, and where else do you think you can take the role of PRO? I mean, for me, it's bringing the action to the people in a different way as well. And, you know, obviously you have to deal with the general PR, but a lot of people would assume, say you're a PR of a company, it's about representing that company. But there feels more to your job, because it's about connecting people with the team and the results and all that type of stuff.
I suppose, to answer the first part of that, what means the most to me is that the ordinary person on the street or in their house gets access to the detail irrespective of which platform they use. It's there. And as much as I love the inter-county stuff, and don't get me wrong, it's great and it's very interesting and it's a great time to be involved in that. I love the club stuff the most, really, because that is working with the ordinary people of
the grassroots.
Absolutely. And I'm proud of my achievements so far, yes. And it's great when people say to me, you know, we're in London or in New York and we can get access to our club results now and where we couldn't in the past.
And to pull that together is quite a piece of work because there's games all over the place at different times and you really need someone you can trust that can feed into
Absolutely.
That. There's a lot of networking that has to be done to make that so.
Yeah, I suppose that's something I've really been conscious of in my second year now is that much as I would love to be able to do absolutely everything, I'm only one person and I need help from people. I have a great wee team around me and they're no drama. They're just brilliant. They just work and we're all working for the one thing, which is the best for Donegal GAA and the best for the grassroots.
How easy is it for you to manage your time? Because given the nature of your role, you really could be at it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week if you wanted to. And certainly at the weekends, you could be, you know, from... You couldn't, if you didn't sleep, you'd have something to do, right? So is it easy for you to sort of manage your time and I suppose balance everything else, that,
I suppose
the day-to-day stuff?
That's the one thing I probably need to be better at is switching off. Mm. But I love it. I absolutely
Well, you see, that's when people try and, that's why people tell me to switch off, but it's something I can imagine myself doing for free, if that makes
absolutely.
Sense. It's just something, I can't switch off from something I care so much about.
Yeah. And I literally do it for free. I don't take expenses and it costs me a fortune to be PRO, don't get me wrong. But as I say, I wouldn't change a thing. And I've often said it, I'm living my best life. I just love it. And I bounce out of bed in the mornings to do what I have to do, be it go to a game or work on something very quietly in the background.
Yeah, but happy. You didn't fall out of the sky and become PRO. I know it's something that you had your eye on. You thought, right, the stuff I can do here. But you've been involved in the sport in different roles for how long? All your adult life?
All my life. Yeah. I suppose it's quite funny. I remember doing my Award 1 coaching course and mm-hmm. I was the only woman on that course.
Wow.
But... you know, Mick Morphy, and congratulations to Mick, actually, who received an award on a very, very, you know, deserved award on Friday night. Mick went round the room and he's saying to everybody, what made you want to get involved in the GAA, or when did you first develop your love at? And some of them were saying, oh, under 12s and took on an under 16 team and want to push it. And I'm like, well, it's simple for me in the womb. and they're all laughing. I'm absolutely serious. My love of the GAA was developed in the womb because it's in my DNA and it's what makes me tick.
Obviously, we are talking about the role women play in sport all of this week, right?
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes the default position is to talk about, is it difficult for women versus men or blah, blah, blah. But I've learned sitting in this chair that really it's up to the individual woman to define that, right? So maybe you're just the best person and it's irrelevant whether you're a man or a woman, or maybe not. Maybe you've faced some challenges because of being a female. So rather than me sort of ask sort of obvious questions in relation to that, is it more challenging as a woman? Does it matter? Or, gender difference? Or
I think in certain circumstances, yes, I think it is more difficult. Personally, I don't mean Donegal in this. I mean, somebody with my qualifications, professional qualifications in the GAA, perhaps I do wonder that if I was male, would I have better opportunities higher up? And I do believe that. And I'm not going to sit back and shirk it. I do believe that if I was male, I probably would get bigger opportunities in the association.
But are you, though, part of a change maybe now? And we've got, of course, our old Mary Coughlin, who is top of the tree here.
Yes.
Do you believe that, you know, from the position you're in now, because whether it's for you or for those that follow you, that maybe break through those seems gender-specific challenges?
Well, one huge thing. At our county convention in December, we were the first county ever to elect three women as three principal officers. Mm. And they're three great women.
On merit.
Mary Coughlin is phenomenal. Now, I mean, I would work with her every day of my life, and I'm not someone to sit back and settle. Mary Coughlan just leads a fantastic ship. That's what we need to be looking at women in sport and in any walk of life. She brings everybody with her. I've learned so much from the woman in 15 months, and I'll keep on learning from her. Our secretary, our incoming secretary now, Mary Kelly, she's in her first year too. And obviously we've Grace Boyle, our treasurer, who is very renowned in her own. I've been very involved in the Donegal Sports Star Awards and the Northwest 10K. She probably didn't need to come back in and do what she did, but she came in because she knows it's for the better of the association within our county. And there are three great women to work with, and they pull everybody with them. That's the way it should be.
Why do you think it is important that there's more female representation? Is it about, you know, if you can see it, you can be it? Is it about maybe bringing different perspectives, maybe breaking through an old guard, whatever it might be? You know, why do you think it's so important? Personally, for me, it's a lot of these things, and I'm not being populist here. Like, half the population's women, right? So, you know, the fact that there should be equal representation seems to me like that's should be a default, yes. But it's not.
It's not, no. But I suppose, speaking from the GAA point of view, we're about our games and our activities. And you show me a Gaelic team that can go onto a pitch without the women that give birth to them. We wouldn't have any. So it's essential that we have women have as much to bring as men, you know. And I suppose there's a phrase that Mary Coughlan uses, we get bleep done. And she's right, we do. And the women that have come into the county, four of us elected last year on the one night, four new along with the one sitting person, Katrina. And we've got a lot done. We've a lot more to do, but we've got a lot done. So we have so much to bring. And I don't think it should. I think it's to some people it matters. And I do believe that sometimes there are women in the association that would try to pull you down. And that's really uncool, to be perfectly honest. But that says more about them than it does about anyone else.
Yeah. Have you faced much of that within the association?
A very little bit. But I mean, they actually inspire me, to be perfectly honest. They just make me want to work just a wee bit harder again. A little bit of it, yeah, where people just possibly afraid of change.
Feel threatened in some form. Yeah, it's hard to know what's in the psyche.
And maybe they're right to be threatened because I'm full on when it comes to it. I want to get stuff done. So, you know, whatever.
What about when you're... it depends on whether you're social media. Not like if you're actively reading responses and DMs, I'm sure you get a ton of crap. We all do, right? But I think particularly women do. And then if you don't read that, you won't get that in real life because people don't have the guts, let me put it like that, to say anything to someone's face or to detract you to you. What has the online experience been? Because in politicians, when women are elevated to senior roles, they seem to be particular targets of a certain cohort of mostly, you know, men, but often anonymous and faceless. Has that been an issue for you?
It really hasn't.
Great.
Thank God. I could count on one hand the number of times that you get somebody, and it's about something that they think that I can control. I'm a big believer in I can only control the controllables and that's it. But very, 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 very little because people see that I'm doing it with 100% best intentions.
So far in a year and a bit, two questions. What's been the greatest challenge? Time management, actually, maybe. I don't know.
Time management, I'd say, probably is because I want to do everything as quickly as I can do it. So I've had to learn that, you know, you have to just set a plan in place. So I had a 12-month plan for last year. I'm delighted to say I achieved it and then some. And I was able to move on to other things. I'm the same this year. But I would say that in the role of PRO, that there is no break. I don't take days off or, you know, I haven't had one full day ever since I've been elected where I haven't done at least a good few hours work. I'm very happy to do that. I love it. But I suppose that's the biggest challenge. It's that it is relentless. We're coming off the back of 5 weeks of five for our footballers too. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't tired.
Nice. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I suppose in the first year, is it what stands out for you in the first year?
I was very lucky in year one. I mean, I was coming
a lot of
in,
cups and stuff.
Yeah, we won the Nicky Rackard and from a hurling club. That was just incredible. I am uber passionate about the school's football. So we had Abby, who won the second tier in Ulster and went on then to win the All-Ireland in that competition. Tomorrow, I'll very happily get up and drop the kids off to school, head to Garvahy for another school's game. It's a playoff. Very best of luck to Scullwara Bunkrana. And I suppose, listen, I love every element of it. So I don't see it as a chore, or you would have to love it though.
Yeah. Well, they say if you, and I know you, as you say, it's voluntary, but if you enjoy your work, you don't work a day in your life, don't they say? What would you like to see change in the game? And it doesn't have to be what's under your control, if you know what I mean, okay. Right? So, you know, you could, the stuff you can achieve and have achieved as PRO, but is there something else there that you would like to see behind the scenes necessarily, or not necessarily, sorry, generally behind the scenes that needs to change? I don't know.
There's nothing actually drastic. Mm. We have a phenomenal actor on, Jared Burns, and I suppose, like myself, we're both originating in the one part of the country in the northeast, and both pretty feisty when need be. Mm. And I think he's turned a lot on his head.
It's progressive. You see, it's a progressive association now.
Yeah, we hosted Congress the weekend before That was a dream come true for our county, and it wasn't just about selling the GAA in the county. It's about selling our county and what we have in it, and what Liam Clancy and his team in the Albion Central put on was phenomenal. So I suppose there's that element of it. I want to push everything that I can in Donegal, not just the GAA, you know.
And would you like to be in maybe Mary Coughlin's seat at some point?
At some stage, yeah.
Well, we're not trying to oust her, don't get me wrong.
No, absolutely not. I'd actually like to be in Jarlath's seat at some stage.
Right, yeah, why not?
But that's been a lifelong plan. That's not just something I've rocked up and decided, oh, I kind of like the look of that. I would have been hoping for that when I was in primary school, but it's like everything else. You have to bide your time, do your shift.
All right, stay there. The Donegal Sports Partnership, they've an order of events to mark Women in Sport Week, which we're just starting at the moment. On Wednesday, the 5th of March, there's the WIS ATU Taster Session Activities, Climbing Wall, Pickleball and Relays. That's at the ATU at the Donegal Letterkenny campus. It starts at 3 in the afternoon. On Friday, Women in Sport Week, a sunrise dip. That's at Rathmullen Pier, kickoff 7 a.m. On Saturday, the 8th of March, as part of Women in Sports Week, yoga and dip, Coldaff Beach, 7:30 a.m. There's another open water dip at Thruppany Pool in Bundoran. That's at 7:45. Come try fishing. I like this one. You can go to Mongari Trout Fishery, Deal Community Anglers. That's at 12 noon. And on Sunday, horse riding. You can have a taste of that at the Drumdoit Stables. Sessions 11, 12, 13, 12, 13 and 14. 11, 12, 1 p.m., 2 p.m. And you can check out Donegal Sports Partnership for a full list of events. So you're away again tomorrow, you say. So it never stops. Do you think that people have a perception that maybe it's just when the Donegal men are out playing that you do anything? Or
No, they're definitely not.
Or as the penny drops, you're literally...
There's no getting rid of me. I'm like a boomerang.
Some people think there might be three or four of you.
People know. I feel very, very passionately about supporting our schools. There are club players.
Yeah.
And I was in Garvahy last week. Kalosh Dalyk, congratulations to them, gorgeous. This does the heart good. It's great. You know, those kids have been through a tough time, and I was absolutely thrilled for them and their management. Brilliant. And this is what it's all about.
And the Donegal PRO role is a one-year term, is it?
It is, yeah,
it'd
yes.
be nice if that was 2-3 years or something for planning. You know how a manager comes in and they can sort of set out a three-year plan?
Yeah.
Give you more scope maybe to...
I know people say that about certain roles, it should be, if it's 3 years, it should be 5 years.
Yes,
but that's all well and good if it's the right person in the role.
That's right.
Three or 5 years is a long time if it isn't. You know?
And you've exactly every year is an opportunity for people to say, right, Sinead is the person for the job the following year.
This is it.
Or the next
job. I have a mandate and I'm coming in with that, and it's the way to have it.
Okay. Now, some of those events that I mentioned, by the way, you can book. You go to Eventbrite. Just search Donegal Sports Partnership. It's been lovely having you in, Action Aid. It's been great sort of watching you acquire the role and grow the role the way you have. And it's kind of exciting to see where it goes from here as well.
Thanks,
so
Greg.
It's always nice when someone works really hard that you can see the fruit of that. And I think people involved in the sport here, right from the schools level to the club level and up to the inter-county level, we'll see that. So Sinead, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg.
We really do appreciate your time. And we'll have another guest as part of Women in Sports Week 2025 tomorrow. But for now, Sinead Breen, Donegal GEA PRO, thanks so much. Now, Danielle McLaughlin is Chime Director of Advocacy and joins me on the show now. Danielle, good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now, today is World Hearing Day, and unfortunately, statistics show that more and more people are waiting, and most of them are children, or many of them are children. More and more people are waiting for treatment, audiology treatment. So a good opportunity to use today to talk about this, because that's affecting a lot of people, Danielle.
Yeah, that's true, Greg. We put out a call today. I mean, it's very significant, World Hearing Day, because hearing health is very important, and not enough is known about it. But we've been doing a lot of work in the background in advocating for government to tackle these waiting lists. They're quite shocking. They've increased about 30% in the past 5 years, so there's over 26,000 waiting on the audiology waiting lists. And some of them would be, in certain regions of the country, up to 3 years waiting lists. So when you're talking about the type of person who's experiencing a hearing loss, who may be older, particularly in their 80s, if they're 82 today, they could be 85 before they get an audiology.
Which proportionately, Danielle, and I don't mean this harshly, but proportionately, this is impacting a large portion of their life, that people should be able to enjoy their latter years with all of their senses as much as is possible.
Absolutely. I mean, it is having it has a potential to have a very detrimental impact on an individual, when they're older. A hearing loss can really affect you with isolation. It can be compounded by a cognitive decline. And so there really is an urgency needed to address the waiting list and for people to get access to hearing aids and assistive technology that they need. And so the government announced last August, the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, announced the working group will be set up to develop a new national hearing care plan. And this was brought about on the recommendation of the World Health Organization. And the working group has to put together a report and look at the provision and potentially bring on board private providers of hearing care. And this will hopefully tackle reduce the waiting list.
This is there's a familiar story here, Danielle, as well, in that our current strategy doesn't make any sense, because by investing now in treating people, we actually save money. Do you know, often there are scenarios whereby you have to throw money at something and there's no dividend. This is cost neutral, because proper investment now saves money down the line in terms of treatment. And all too often, it seems to be particularly in health that we need another study to tell us what we already know.
Exactly, yes. And again, the World Health Organization has pointed this out, that early intervention will save the government money long term in future reduced health costs, and also reduced impact on individuals with a hearing care loss. So it's really important that we get the results of this working group, and they should have a report prepared soon. So we're calling for that to come urgently, and to have a refocus by the new Minister for Health, Jennifer Carr-McNeill, to work on this. So we're hoping to meet with her and to get across, this need. The other concern really as well is with the growing numbers of undiagnosed hearing loss cases amongst children. Yeah. As you said, you might think there may be more older people affected by this, but young people will have a very significant impact as well, whether it impacts their learning in school and their engagement, or whether speech and language acquisition can be delayed. And then even just among your peers and that potential, you know, stigma.
Do we have any screening in relation to that, Danielle? Because it's difficult for young people to articulate something that's the norm for them, right? So if a young person is hearing isn't the same as, you know, their peer, they don't really have a reference point. Someone older perhaps can. Maybe the adults in the house might notice something and then go and get their ears checked. We did that in our house, so I understand that process. But do we have a way of sort of screening like we do with teeth? And again, that's not bloody perfect either, is it, by a long shot? But, you know, are we picking up instances where children have hearing loss and it could be affecting their language and their development and their social skills even?
Yeah, so all of these indicators can indicate a hearing loss, and I think those people engaging with the children will be in a position to kind of identify that and get them engaged in, you know, going to the GP for a diagnosis. The services are there. I mean, it's just the challenge with the delays with the HSE and the lack of kind of oversight in public private providers. So there is support, there is the care, it's just the delay.
And it's the wrong way around, Danielle. Like, if you go to a speech and language therapist, they will often refer you to get the child's ears checked. But if you don't go to the speech and language therapist, the ear check doesn't happen, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Whereby you could get a child's ears checked in a timely fashion, and then maybe you could be referred. Do you know what I mean? Like, we need to have that. That has to be a two-way thing, I believe. Danielle, obviously Chimes advocating as you are today here, but you also work directly with people as well. Talk to me a little bit about that and maybe services that are available for people tuned into the show today.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, you know, one of the groups, we provide advice and services and certain support groups. So they're one of those groups that would help those children would be the family groups. And we provide community support. So we have 12 resource centres around the country, one in Letterkenny and High Road. And then, you know, there's outreach services. There's newly diagnosed weekends for parents of children newly diagnosed. And other range of support groups. So, I mean, we're there for anyone who needs the support, wants to access audiology care, and we also provide hearing care, hearing aids, and that can people can be referred to us directly, even while they're waiting for the audiology treatment through the HSE. And you can find us online on chime.ie, and we have a free phone number, 1-800-256-257.
All right. We need to start seeing a retreat in these waiting lists. There's no doubt, so much of this is time sensitive. Thanks for helping us highlight this issue, Danielle. I do appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Take care. Danielle McLaughlin, Chime Director of Advocacy there. We spoke to Peter Casey earlier on in the programme, and he's chucking his hat in the ring. He wants to have another go. It's kind of interesting in some of his positions. He supports Donald Trump, but doesn't support Donald Trump in his treatment of Zelensky, President Zelensky. Sorry, I shouldn't be disrespectful. And President Trump, thinks our neutrality is a joke. And also, if he was president, he would have pardoned Enoch Berg, but he wouldn't pardon him now. So quite a bit to unpack, and you've been unpacking it too via the means of texts and phone calls. A caller says, tell Peter to save his money. The Irish people will not become cannon fodder. Another, Peter Casey lives in America. Why would anyone vote for him? In what has he done for Ireland? He would say he's done quite a lot through advocacy, but also in business terms, but he can campaign himself. Mr. Casey said he was done and dusted following his dismal performance in the recent polls. I reckon the man's either an attention junkie or a glutton for the ballot box. The President of Ireland, says another, has no political power. He's simply a symbol. It's the same as the King in the UK. Only the Prime Minister Taoiseach has this kind of power. Another caller says, defend Ireland. Defend Ireland from what or who exactly? Who would want to invade Ireland? The man's clueless. I think he's saying that Shannon could be an attractive venue for invasion or what have you in the event of a a more widespread ward. Another caller says, we will be more under threat now as the UK are going to start a bomb missile plant in Belfast. Surely that's the first place to get hit, and I'm sure surrounding areas would be under threat too. Judging by the comments this morning regarding our neutrality and general unrest throughout the world, are people finally beginning to worry about Ireland's future? I'm certainly not happy with Micheál Martin and Simon Harris's attitude towards what we as a country feel about how Ireland is heading. Two men in suits and their cronies are basically doing what they like, and it's definitely not for the good of their people. We've no say, opposition have no say, and the government promised everything and gave nothing, they say. Hi, Greg. I think that if the deal had been signed in the White House, giving part of Ukraine to America within weeks, Trump would have given this part of Ukraine to Putin. After all, it is alleged the Russian intervention played a big part in Trump beating Hillary Clinton to become president. Well, it's sort of the mineral rights that the United States want, not like a land grab as such. They want access to mineral rights and kind of split it 50-50 with Ukraine as a way to recoup some of the money they did say send to Ukraine. Another caller says the total bill between America and Ukraine was $190 billion, not more. Ukraine owed America. It was given as aid. Ukraine did not get a loan from Joe Biden. This was military aid. Ukraine paid them back through deaths of troops. Another, why don't the people get together and throw this so-called government to the streets? Well, I mean, the public had an opportunity to do that not so long ago and endorsed Fianna Fáil and Fine Gaels in the numbers as such to have them back in power. So if that's what the people did then, they're hardly going to want to go out in the streets and overthrow them. They're happy enough with what's going on, clearly. Good morning, Greg. Micheál Martin and Cove, no problem helping Ukraine in protecting their sovereignty, yet at the same time, the Taoiseach has said in the Dáil that he doesn't want anything to do with something as backward as Irish sovereignty. These people aren't for Ireland, never were. We need a provisional government put in place like Iceland did and put the traitorous criminals that are in government in prison, and I'm sure they wouldn't see their roles as such. 2018, I was referred as having severe hearing loss. 2025, guess what? They're still waiting. Every day I'm ringing and I've been told my referral has been lost. I've been in several times to see ENT doctors and the follows it up, but still nothing been done. 7 years they were referred with severe hearing loss in 2018, still waiting in 2025. That's a system that needs looking at. Great to see a Donegal game back in the south of the county at long last, Greg. South Donegal's the traditional heartland of Donegal GEA, after all. Hopefully there'll be more games there going forward. The game itself was brutal, though. Still far too much lateral hand-passing going on. I'm glad we won. Not sure we deserved it, though. That comes in from Noel. And there is a certain amount of league games played outside Ballybofey, isn't there? I'm not sure how it's divvied up between Letterkenny and Ballyshannon, but Father Tierney Park, the pitch looked great, actually. Credit to the Lions people, though there did seem to be a little bit of slipping. I'm not sure if that was the conditions or the boots, but the pitch looked great. You know, often with the GEA pitches, it seems quite long grass, but I don't know what it was like to play on, but it certainly looked good. Donegal could lose both remaining matches and still end up in a league final, indeed. Kieran Thompson showed great leadership yesterday, says another caller. Hi, Greg. Did the journalist that asked Zelensky... Oh, I read that one already. He asked them... did he ask Elon Musk the same question? Back to football, sorry. Something now, especially the way Jim was saying about tiredness, player welfare, and the closeness of Donegal playing preliminary rounds, have concerns for players burning out. No breaks on or off field. I'm afraid nobody can stick that. Bad enough, county players, but clubs could feel it more, all right, making rules to speed the game up. But if we haven't the players to rotate, still a lot to look at. Indeed, and Jim McGuinness too also talked of that circuit break, didn't he, in terms of the next few days. Hi, can you say good luck to Eva Ashin agus Sinead agus their teacher Mairead from PCC Falkara, who are in the Junk Couture World Finals tomorrow. From all the supporters, we'll chase up with them to see how they get on. Patsy made a point just listening to Sinead Breen, very competent person doing a great job as PRO, but just disappointed that as we are in Seachtain na Gaeilge, that she didn't address anything as Gaeilge. And even for you, Greg, be nice if you could use a couple of focal for Seachtain na Gaeilge. Listen, Patsy, you know, you're spot on. This is not Sinead's fault. Sinead obviously wouldn't want to be ignorant and speak Irish to me. My understanding of it is poor. That's on me. I'm sorry. What I can do what I can do is try and give other people the platform to promote the language and speak the language. Unfortunately, at this stage, I can't. But as I say, I think Sinead's just been polite in how she was engaging in the interview. So that's on me, Patsy. You make a very good point. Do I wish it was a different way? Yes, I very much do. But all I can do is sort of use the platform to try and support and promote the language that way. All right, listen, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Busy. We're always busy. Mondays, sometimes you can take a day off with the texts and the phone calls, but not today. We really do appreciate it. Every single one is read. The overwhelming majority are read on air. If we don't get to them today, we certainly will try our best for tomorrow. So that's where we leave it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Thanks for engaging. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, but stay safe and stay tuned. Because